This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
It's with McAllister, who gets his ball into the six-yard area, and it's a good save from Richard O'Donnell.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with a goalkeeper whose journey is yet again unique. Born and raised as a man of steel, he's been north, south, east and west to be a lone star, a captain and a multiple player of the year in what has so far been a 17-year career. From the Championship to the Northern Prem and back again, he is, according to those he's worked with over the years, a great down-to-earth guy and bright character with an excellent attitude and leadership qualities. Big Dick, in the middle of our goal, Big Dick, Rich O'Donnell, welcome to the Goalkeeper. Union podcast.
Thank you very much. That was a nice welcome. Thank you.
some nice quotes from people you've worked with over the years there.
Yeah, I don't know. My mum and dad must have obviously got in touch and give you them quotes. But no, nice quotes to be fair. And I like to think that that's sort of the way I've worked in my career. Just tried to work as hard as I can wherever I am and got me the career I've had, really.
It's a great chant as well, isn't it? Is that purely from Rochdale or was that sung before?
Yeah, no, that's a Rochdale one. It started as Big Rich and then developed into Big Dick. So the first time I heard it, I had a little chuckle to myself. But yeah, it's a nice chant to have.
It's madness, right? To our house. Is it to that tune?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's great to have you here. Thank you for coming. We are in lovely surroundings. Yeah. Recommended by you. So it's the first time, actually, we've hosted a podcast at a venue recommended by the guest.
Oh, there you go, then. Yeah. Hopefully it won't be the last. It's got a nice little coffee, so good to go.
Tankersley Manor we are right now, right? Yeah. So this is Barnsley-ish way.
Yeah. Just off Junction 36 M1, so nice in the Yorkshire roots here.
Lovely stuff. Okay, so we start every podcast with five, it used to be three, it's now five quick fire questions just to kick things off. Yeah. So the first of those is the gloves that you wear and slash have worn over the years.
So I have been with Callier now previously KA, for the last 11 years or so. So a long time, really. I first met Kenny when I went on loan to Grimsby. He was the goalkeeper there. He was injured, which is why I went in there. And I've worn him ever since, to be fair. I think they've got better and better and better every year. And the ones that I'm wearing currently are the Joe Hart model. I don't know if everyone's aware of them, but they're honestly the best gloves I've ever worn.
They're making quite a play, aren't they, Callier?
Yeah, so obviously Kenny's based up north in Scotland and he's got a lot of the Scottish goalkeepers on him, big names, Joe Arts and Alan McGregor and people like that. So he's gone, like I said, from 10 years, 11 years ago to where he is now, he's done extremely well and he's got a lot of good goalkeepers wearing his gloves.
Favourite kit?
That I've wore or...
It can be a kit that you've worn or it can be a kit that anyone else has worn. I guess the most favourite kit you've seen in football.
Do you know the one that springs to my mind is Peter Schmeichel in the green one that is zipped up?
Ah, yes.
I don't know if that was a treble winning season even.
It was almost like an Illumina-y type of green with the darker green sleeves.
Yes, that's the one and it zipped up on the neck. And that one just stands out to me because that was sort of when I was sort of growing up and really getting into goalkeeping, that was the one that was prominent because Man United was such a good team at the time and you see Peter Schmeichel wearing it and you're like, oh, I wanted one of them. I don't think I ever got my hands on one, but that's the one that springs to my mind all the time when I think about goalie shirts.
Nice. Okay. Most memorable save. Now, this doesn't have to be the greatest save you've ever made. It could have been a save that you've made in training, but the save that sticks out for you.
A couple spring to mind, to be fair. When I was at Bristol City, we played Brentford away at the old ground. Cross came in from their right, quite high into towards a penalty spot, and the guys headed it towards like my top right hand corner. So I've had to get quite a few steps in, and I've gone top hand and tipped it over the bar. And that one just really that springs to mind. That was one of the better ones that, like I say, springs to mind. And then like importance wise, and when I was at Walsall, we had Preston in the Johnson's Paint area final. Obviously now it's Papa John's. We played Preston away in the area final and at 0-0, I think it was Gallagher. Remember Gallagher? I can't remember
his first. Oh, yeah. Is it Paul Gallagher?
Paul Gallagher might have been, yeah. Crossed one in swinger and it's gone quite low. And it probably only went about 4 or 5 yards. And at the time, I'm thinking, oh, man, I should have come for that. But instead, I've just made this like big sort of Kasper Schmeichel, like Peter Schmeichel sort of like spread. And it's just hit my foot and gone wide. But the importance of that, we went on to win 2-0 and we ended up getting to Wembley. and it was Walsall's first ever trip to Wembley. So the importance of that was massive. So that one always springs to my mind. Yeah.
I think I've seen this. So you jump and it comes off your foot.
Yeah. I sort of got, like I said, at the time it was like an in-swinging one. It was quite low, but I'm still thinking, I was thinking at the time, I should have come for the cross. And then just instinctively, I've just sort of like jumped and gone a bit, little bit of a starfishy, like I said, sort of thing. And it's luckily just hit my right foot and gone out wide. And in that game, I made a few other good saves. I got man of the match on TV. And it was, like I said, the importance of it for the club at the time was, obviously we went on to get to Wembley for the first time. And yeah, to go down in history for the club, I suppose.
Goalkeeping icon.
Goalkeeping icon. I'm going to go for David James. And the reason is, I used to watch David James all the time. And some people call him erratic, some people call him, you know, whatever. But I always saw him being so brave and, like, just out there, out of his comfort zone. He would, like, come for crosses, like, out of the penalty spot and all sorts. And sometimes he'd get it wrong and it wouldn't look great. But he'd keep coming and he'd keep doing it again. And he was just capable of making great saves. And I even remember playing against him when he was at Bristol City towards the end of his career, and he was still really good, always in great shape, and played till his late 30s, I think he was. And, yeah, he was one that, me growing up, I used to take a lot of interest in.
So many goalkeepers we speak to say the same thing about David James. It just goes to show, doesn't it? When you know the position, you know what to look for. And the reputation he had outside of goalkeeping, like you said, erratic, yeah. Calamity James, all yeah. of that sort of stuff. But he was so proactive. Oh. And even if he made a mistake, he would go out again.
He'd go and do the same. If he thought that was the right decision, he would go and do the same thing again. And he would probably get it right the next time. But he was so quick, athletic, brave, like I say, so dominant around his box. Like you're right to say, people outside of the goalkeeping, so Union would have called him Calamity James. He's very erratic, but he was something else. He was brilliant.
And the last one, the best goalkeeper you've either played with or against?
Well, I played against David James, so I can't really back off away from that.
Of course.
David James is right up there, like I say, back end of his career. Do you know what? I've had a couple of different ways. So Lee Grant was like, when I was at Sheffield Wednesday and I was a first year pro, Lee first came in and he stayed for 4 or 5 years. And the first year I was there, I was like third choice, and that's where I went on loan and this and over, and I went away. And then the following season, I'd done well on loan, so I came back as a number two. And Granty was incredible for 3 or 4 years. Never missed a game. So I'm obviously number two at Sheffield Wednesday at 19, 20, thinking, I'm only a step away from playing in the first team here. And he never went off injured, never missed a day of training. He was like Iron Man. He was incredible. But one of the best professionals, how he looked after himself. Obviously, he only finished last year or the year before. He was just incredible. And what a great guy as well. So the one, like I said, that I've worked with for a long period of time, who I looked at as a young age, and I thought, you know what, that's how you do it. And that's how you look after yourself. And that's how you go about it day in, day out, to try and be the best. And it didn't surprise me. They went on, played for Man United and played in the Premier League for Stoke and Man United, because he was just incredible day in, day out. And the other one who I thought was unbelievable in training was Lewis Price.
Okay.
Lewis Price.
Yeah.
I think he was at MK Dons beginning of the season as goalie coach. And his work ethic and the way he trained, the level of training that he produced day in, day out was incredible as well. Like I went in and he was at Rotherham at the time. And I'm looking at him thinking, how is this guy not playing? Why have they brought me in when you've got this guy here? Because he was incredible. Everything was so clean. Again, ultimate professional. He was just incredible in training. He was probably the best trainer I've ever played with. The best. And I think a lot of people would say that as well if they know Lewis. Just his standards that he set every day. I was shocked when I sort of did a little bit of research on Lewis when I first went in there, how little he'd actually played in his career. He's had a good career, don't get me wrong, in a different sense of he's been at some big clubs, he has played a fair few games, but I was surprised he didn't go on and really kick on looking at how he performed in training every day.
It's really interesting as well what you've just said there about the fact that you went in, saw him and thought, why am I here? I don't need to be here. That's another point that we hear quite a lot of from goalkeepers when they've gone into a club on loan, seen the number one and even the number two in some cases and thought, well, I don't need to be here. These guys are good.
Yeah. Well, obviously in that case, I didn't previously know what Lewis had done in the games. I don't really know how he performed. But like I said, I'm walking into the building and we had a full week of training before my first game, and it was Newcastle away, the first game. Walked in there, like I said, the first week of training, I'm looking at Pricey thinking, I'm going to have to chopping up here. If I want to play, I'm gonna have to have a right go and give it everything I've got. But even still, I'm thinking he's flying here. I was like, I don't think I'm gonna play. Like, I'm speaking to my wife, thinking I'm coming here. I don't think I'm gonna play. This guy's really good. And it turned out that like the day before we played Newcastle, I think Pryce was off ill, and I ended up playing, and then I stayed in. But his attitude and his application, and like I said, just his the level that he trained to was incredible. Yeah.
That's a baptism of fire going into Newcastle for your debut, isn't it?
Yeah, we got... I don't remember the score. I think it was two. It was either 2 or 3-0, I think it was.
I think it might have been 4.
Was it 4?
Yeah, I think it was.
How do you remember that? I don't remember.
I don't remember. I've looked at it before we've come
Fair
in.
Fair enough, yeah. yeah, I think it was like... I think it was only 1-0 at half-time. And then second half, I can remember we had a really good chance at 0-0. Took it right. In fact, the video, you've probably seen it, because it was out there a lot. Our striker went round Carl Darlow. And then he tried to cut it back, and Carl's come back and made a save eventually. But yeah, I remember that at 0-0. I think, oh, we should have scored there. We could have gone on one. And we obviously lost 4-0 in the end, like you've just told me. I thought it were 2, but there we go.
Well, that's, I guess, midway through part of your career. So we are going to journey through some of it. We'll go here, there and everywhere. But I think the fact that you are now, 17 years into the game, I've totted up 16 clubs, is that about right, including a number of loans?
Yeah,
of course.
So people say this to me about you've had a lot of clubs and that, but when I look at my career and where it all started, I didn't really start playing week in, week out until I was 25 probably at Walsall. So when I was at Sheffield Wednesday, I can remember going to Alfreton on loan, signed on the Tuesday, I got recalled on Thursday. I never actually played for them because once someone got injured, so I never had, like, that counts as a loan. I never actually played, so that's what. And then like I must have had 4, 5, 6 loans when I was at Sheffield Wednesday, which at the time in your career, you're thinking, yeah, it's the right thing to do. And I'm glad I did, because you need that exposure as a young keeper. I think, like, I look at things now and I think it's a lot more difficult for young goalies to go out and get games. I just see that, like, clubs that I've been at and the goalie coach is saying, oh, we need to get X, Y, Z out on loan, and they really struggle to find them a club at any level. Obviously, the transfer windows and things have not helped in recent years for goalkeepers in particular. Unless you've got no goalkeepers at the club and you get emergency loan, it's difficult to go out a window and get a club. Whereas when I was younger, it was a case of you can go on loan at any point in the season, basically. So it was a lot easier to go out on loan. And like I say, I'm glad I did, because it gave me that sort of exposure, gave me that experience I needed at a young age. And like I say, I ended up going on loan. I think my last one before I ended up being number 2 at Wednesday was at Oldham. So I made my league debut at Oldham. And then I came back and I was number 2. So if I hadn't gone and done these loans, I wouldn't have been in a position to then go and be the number 2 and then eventually go on and play for Sheffield Wednesday and probably have the career I've had. So I'm grateful for all the 16 clubs that I've represented. And like I said, people say 16 clubs, but 8 or 9 maybe have been permanent, maybe 10 touch, I'm not sure. But yeah, I wouldn't change it for the world, to be fair.
That debut you mentioned there, your pro debut for Oldham, that was an emergency loan, wasn't it?
That was, yeah. So that was a bit funny, actually. So I went in, I've gone into to training on the Friday and then just literally got a call. Billy Mercer, our goalie coach, Sheffield Wednesday, sort of pulled me in and said, do you want to go to Oldham on loan and play tomorrow at Luton? I was like, well, yeah, of course I do. So I literally got my stuff together, got in my car, drove down to Luton myself, got there before the team got there because they trained, obviously, in Oldham on Friday morning. So they got the bus down, I drove down. First time I met the team was Friday evening for the evening meal. So I'm sat there, obviously like 19-year-old, sat on my own waiting for the lads to come in for the food. They started coming in, like introducing themselves, and I'm sat there like, God, this is awful. Like,
really? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah,
is there not excitement, no?
No? I was so nervous. I was proper nervous. Like, so nervous. It was, like I said, because I'd been on the bench a couple of times possibly for Wednesday at this point, because I think like when I was younger, I think as a second-year scholar, I was on the bench a couple of times, but not really, like, I've been to Grimsby, I think, before that, and a couple of non-league teams, but this is like League One, you're making your debut in the league, and so you're nervous about the game anyway. Excited, but nervous more than anything. I was nervous, so I've walked into the thing. Like I said, I've not had that luxury of getting the bus down with them, sat with them, a couple of them, like, get to know them, then I know I can sit with them at dinner because I've had a little chat with them. So I'm sat there, and they're all walking in, and there's people, like, senior pros, like 36, 37-year-olds walking in. I'm 19, there must be. I'm sat there I was sat there in like an Umbro tracksuit. They're all in their Oldham gear because I didn't have any gear. And I turned up to the game in an Umbro tracksuit because I didn't have a tracksuit for the game, an Oldham one. So I'm sat there and I'm thinking, God, that's a walking in. And had my food, kept myself quiet, went to bed, woke up the next day, played this game, and then also went training with them the following week and really got to start getting integrated to the squad. But that first, like, Friday, Saturday was, it was terrifying. It was. I was sat there and I'm thinking, it was just awful. I'm driving down all that way, like 3 hours in the car, 2 hours in the car, whatever it was, by myself, thinking all the time in the world to think about this game tomorrow, by myself, which is unheard of, really. I was by myself in the car, like I said, for two and a half, 3 hours, just thinking about this game tomorrow. I'm making my league debut tomorrow, like thinking about what could happen, what could go well, what could go wrong. And then, like I said, getting the hotel, the first one there, checked into our room. I'm thinking, could anyone just walk in the room and be with me? Luckily, I had my own room. The manager gave me his room, actually, and he shared with someone else. So I sat in, and then, like I say, I sat waiting for dinner, and people are coming in and thinking, do I need to get up and introduce myself? And it was like I say, and when I look back now, I'm thinking it's a bit daft, really, but like at the time, it was terrifying.
Yeah, and I guess nothing can prepare you for that, right? You're a young lad, and it's different now, I suppose. We spoke to James Trafford last week, who has been in the Manchester City system since he was 12 years old. So there's a process that he's followed. So when it came to making his debut for Accrington, which was his first loan spell, he was very much ready for that. But you then, as a young lad at Sheffield Wednesday, we're talking, what, 15-odd years ago, that's something that, and we can even touch on the four stages of learning here, that's something that you wouldn't have been prepared for because you literally didn't know what was going to come. You had to endure that experience to then build from it.
No, it was literally, like I say, you're thrown in the deep end as such, and that's just how it was. And but like I said, being honest, I wouldn't change it. Like I say, it's made me like the goalkeeper and the person I am. I've had to chuck myself into a lot of scenarios over my career, and I wouldn't change any of it. I've enjoyed it. I've learned a lot from it. So that experience, I learned a lot from. So the next time I did it, I sort of thought, like, I've got to be a bit more like confident and a bit more like have a little bit more about myself. Otherwise, the people are going to think, like, look, this guy's just sat there. He's a goalkeeper. He's sat there in the corner, just quiet. And it made me think about and realise that, you know what, yeah, I need to have a little bit about myself here and come out my shell a little bit. And it helped me, 100%.
Do you think it would have been different if you'd made your debut for Sheffield Wednesday?
Yeah, because they would probably have, I would say, probably knew who I was at that point. You know, you've played at a club like Sheffield Wednesday, whether it be a handful of times or a few times, they probably know more of you and what you're about. But yeah, it was a mad couple of days, to be honest. And again, I'm driving home after the game myself, and we'd lost. You might correct me. I think it was 2-0.
It's 3-0.
3-0. I'm trying to knock goals off left, right, and centre. But I remember the first goal was a penalty. We had a man sent off, so we're down to 10 men looting away. I think they were doing quite well at the time. So I think, yeah, it's not what you want on your league debut. Down to 10 men, they just scored a penalty. It finished 3-0, but overall did okay in the game. And I just remember driving back home thinking, like, glad that's out of the way. Like, you got the first one done, and I felt like I could just, like, relax a little bit more once you got that league debut out of the way. I just felt a little bit more comfortable with where I was at.
We talk about Newcastle being a baptism of fire. This being your pro debut as well, I was looking at that Luton team. It was a period of transition for them as they made their way down the leagues. Of course, they're now back up with a possibility of going back to the very top flight, of course. But in that team, so they had the likes of Chris Perry, Paul McVeigh, Paul Furlong, Don Hutchinson and Sam Parkin. I mean, if they're chucking balls in the box and you're a 19-year-old goalkeeper.
Yeah, 100%. Like I say, you look around, like, again, first corner looking in, you're looking around trying to sort out what's going on, you're looking for it. Get absolutely leathered here. And to be fair, I still think the same now. Like, you corners and stuff like that, you're looking in the box, like, and you see some of the guys coming in, you think, wow, look at these guys, you have to, like, really get going for this. But yeah, well, as a 19-year-old, you, like I say, you're looking at these players who you're well aware of and what they've done in their careers, and you're thinking, yeah, it's going to be a tough game. And like I say, I just remember driving away again, driving myself back up the road in my own car. It sounds a bit, like, strange to say, but relieved that it was just out of the way. And like I said, we'd lost the game, which I was disappointed in. And I was generally pleased with how I played overall. I made a few saves and kicked it quite well from what I can remember. But I just remember, like I say, getting in the car, thinking, right, that's done now. Like, I can sort of prepare myself for the next one. I've got a week till the next game now. I can sort of get my head round it, train with the lads and sort of go from there and hopefully build on it from that.
Speaking of emergency loans as well, I'd just like to get your opinion on this because it served you well in that respect. And when you were younger, it was slightly different. You mentioned the fact that Lee Grant was at Sheffield Wednesday for a long period of time, which kind of, halted your progress, but meant that you weren't able to take that step into first team football at Sheffield Wednesday. Played a few games, of course, but you mentioned that it wasn't until you were 25 that I would say effectively you found your own home. Yeah. So this is where your story is yet again unique. Like I said at the top, every goalkeeper that we speak to, there's always just something different about their story. And just looking at your career, I would say, of course, you had Wednesday, but you were there as a kid. You eventually got released. I would say you found a home at Walsall for a couple of years, and then one other club being Bradford. Yeah. So I'd say you kind of had two homes in your career.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair to say, yeah. I mean, the Walsall was, the move was, the way it came about was, when I got released from Sheffield Wednesday, I went to Chesterfield and had a year there. I played maybe 20 games and Tommy Lee was there. I played 20 games because Tommy Lee got injured, really. So I filled in there. Tommy came back from injury and I didn't play for the rest of the season. So then I get released from Chesterfield at 24, maybe 25 or so. I can't remember. I think it was 24. And I've got released from Chesterfield in League Two. And I'm thinking, like,
that must have been quite difficult because you stepped out of Sheffield Wednesday. You stepped out of that safety net to go, right, okay, now my career is going to start. Yeah. And then a year later, you're in limbo again.
Yeah, well, like I say, I've left Chesterfield in League Two, thinking to myself, well, I've just been released from Chesterfield in League Two. Like, where do I go from here? And I remember having a few offers, like part-time and stuff, and I'm thinking to myself, what's going on here? Like, this can't be the way it's going to go. And it's going through the summer. It's getting later and later in the summer, and nothing's really coming up. And my wife was due as well in September with Archie, my eldest. And I'm thinking, what am I going to do here? I don't know where my career or my life's going to go at this point. And it was literally that point. I don't know where my life is going to go from here. And luckily, I ended up getting a trial at Walsall. Neil Cutler was the goalie coach. Dean Smith was the manager. Richie O'Keller, the assistant. They took me in on a trial. There was a few other keepers like dipping in and out of the trial as well. So I'm there with at least one of the trialists every day. Like, I was lucky enough to stay there for the whole sort of two or three week period. Went in first day pre-season. I think I had a week at the training base with him, and then ended up going to Trinidad and Tobago on pre-season with him, which was just bizarre because I'm thinking, why Walsall going to Trinidad and Tobago? But anyway, that's another story. So I've gone to Trinidad and Tobago.
Why did you go to Trinidad and Tobago?
The way I remember it is there was a club that was supposed to go on this trip and they pulled out, and there was sort of like a free space, as in like free cost-wise. So I think the club were like, okay, we'll go. So we ended up going, and I'll be honest, it was a bit of a nightmare trip. It wasn't all the glam that you think Trinidad, well, I don't know if you think it's glamorous, but the food was horrendous, and like the hotels we stayed in weren't great. It was so hot. Like
the pitches, I can't imagine they were good.
It weren't a luxury trip, put it that way. And but before I go on this trip, I said to Cuts, like, listen, when I get back, the day I get back, I need an answer whether you're going to sign me or not, because it's getting into third, fourth week of pre-season here. And if I don't sign here, I'm getting to the point where like clubs are all going to be taking my goalkeepers. So I need to know. And they're like, yeah, okay, we'll sort it out when we get back. There's a couple of games out there. We'll look at you in the games and this and the other. So I was like, right, okay. Ended up going over there. And then a couple of days after we get back, obviously, I was lucky enough. I got a year contract there. And this is where football is mental. So like I said, I've left League Two. Got released from a League Two club. We finished just outside the playoffs that year at Chesterfield. And then all of a sudden I'm signing in League One with Walsall. Albeit like my wage went down from where I was from League Two to League One, believe it or not. But that wasn't the thing for me. I wasn't bothered about the wages or anything like that. I'd been given this opportunity to go into a League One club. And I was going to be number one. So yeah, it's probably an hour 45 from my house. I'm going to have to drive every day, because the wages I'm getting aren't going to pay for an house or rent somewhere else when I've got a house. I'm not selling my house when my wife's just about to give birth and move them all away from the family. So I'm going to have to drive this every day. So I drive it every day. And it was the best thing I ever did. Best thing I ever did. Like I said, financially it was tough, I'll be honest. It was, I was spending a lot of money on diesel and fuel getting up and down there. But I've ended up going there, signing a year after 3 or 4 months, start talking about a new contract to give me an extra year and a little bit more money. So I think come the January, I signed another year. I played 105 consecutive games in League and Cup. That sort of, like I said earlier, that set me off on my career from a 25-year-old, like, well, 24, getting released from League Two, to then all of a sudden, 2 years later, I've played 105 consecutive games at a good level, a higher level, done really, really well, got player of the year both years, got to Wembley, and that's how quickly football can change. Because like I say, I'm leaving Chesterfield thinking not just where's my career going to go, where's my life going to go here? Because this could go anywhere. Genuinely could have gone anywhere. I could have been out of the game. I could have been playing part time. I ended up getting a club in League One, and that sort of changed my whole career and my whole journey in football.
I mean, that's goalkeeping in a nutshell, right there, isn't it? And there is so much to dissect from that particular story. I guess the first question I have is, did you have anything to fall back on? So say you hadn't got that trial.
Honestly, no, not really. I was lucky enough that when I was at Sheffield Wednesday, so when you're a scholar, you do your sort of level C coaching badges. So I did that, and I was lucky enough to have Billy Mercer as my first team goalie coach. And straight away he said to me, listen, go and do your B licence, get that done. When you do that, go and do your goalkeeper B licence and do it now. Just get it done. And then if anything happens in your career, an injury or anything that happened, you've got that to fall back on then. And at the time, I'm thinking, I don't really want to go and do my B licence, my outfield B licence at 19. I don't want to do it. But I did it, got it done at 19, 20. And then I went and did my goalkeeper one, which I actually finished off when I was at Walsall. So I did have that side of it to sort of fall back on. But in terms of anything else, not really, no. I would have been just looking for a job like everyone else, really, and trying to find a new career. And I would probably have to start, like I said, doing another apprenticeship somewhere and building my way up that way.
And there are decisions that need to be made in this time as well. Like you said, you're about to have a new young family. So it's getting to the end of the summer and nothing's coming up. Is it a case that you are, for want of a better term, almost prostituting yourself around clubs to basically get whatever you can?
100%, yeah. I mean, yeah. Obviously, I had an agent at the time. He was obviously putting calls in. And it was actually the summer before that was when I went on my B licence for my coaching. I went to St George's Park, wasn't open at the time. It was still being built. So I went to, I think it was called Woking Park in Reading. Went down there to do my B. And I actually networked with a lot of people there, Cuts being one of them. So on that B licence, I've connected with Cuts and a few other people. Cuts at the time was at Bury. When I left Sheffield Wednesday, Berry was mentioned a little bit because obviously I met Cuts and this and the other. And then Cuts has obviously gone to Walsall, and that's how that sort of come on. So that was like the story behind how it actually came about, the networking side of it. And even to this day, it's really important. It's something that I try and do an awful lot, because not only for me and my career, but I've learned so much off other people. It's been incredible. So going through my badges now, my A licence in goalkeeping, being in and around all these other people who have, a lot of them are first team coaches already, a lot of 23s and doing whatever they do, but I've took so much away from what they do and I can use it for my development in that sense. So the importance of it is huge. And like I say, all them years ago, who would have thought that moment could be the moment that actually meeting Cuts on this B licence, goalkeeping B licence, would have been the change in what my career was.
Sliding doors all the time, isn't it? Yeah. And when you're on that trial, it becomes quite a fine balancing act, doesn't it? Because you're not wholeheartedly committed to the club and neither are they to you. So on one hand, you want the decision. Like you said, you got to a point where you felt like you had to push that decision. But on the other hand, you don't want to push that decision too soon because you don't want to force them into a decision which maybe isn't the decision that you want them to make. So it's quite a difficult scene to judge, especially with that pre-season eking itself away and the season not too far off.
Yeah, I think we went around, I think it was about a week, 10 days before we ended up going to Trinidad. And then the trip to Trinidad was another week. So that took us into going into three or four, obviously going into the third, fourth week of pre-season. And pre-season is only probably 6 weeks long. So I'm getting into the last couple of weeks before the season starts, really. Obviously, speaking to my agent at the time about it and how we should go about it, and I felt that I sort of needed to have that. And I had a good relationship with, like, I felt like I could speak to. So this is early on in like mine and Cuts' sort of relationship as a player coach sort of thing, and I felt like I could have that conversation with him from an early time in knowing him. So I had this conversation with him about, listen, as soon as I get back from Trinidad, I really need to know what's going on, because if not, I might have to go and trial somewhere else, and if I don't get in somewhere else, I might have to go somewhere else, and this could snowball. He was like, yeah, listen, I totally get where you're coming from. I'll speak to the manager and I'll see what sort of we can do. And then he came back and said, yeah, why don't you just come to Trinidad? When we come back, we'll have a good conversation, see where we're at, and we'll take it from there. So, again, building the relationships with your goalkeeper coach as a goalkeeper is huge, because, like I say, even from an early a week into knowing him properly, working with him, that I could have that conversation with him. And that's sort of a credit to Kutz that he was that approachable and that sort of guy that was, he was helpful. He was, like I say, from day one, he was brilliant. And he saw in me probably what others didn't in terms of my goalkeeping ability, because obviously, like I say, being released from Chesterfield, probably not a great look. It's not a great look when you're going into a League One club. But he saw right from the beginning what I could potentially get to. And a lot of credit of, I say this to this day, and I say it to him, a lot of credit of my career goes to Kutz and what he sort of did with me in that 2 years, because without that, I wouldn't have stepped on and played. I played 450-odd games in my career now, and I would never have gone on and done that if it wasn't for Kutz.
Can really be a game of opinions, can't it? What one goalkeeper coach doesn't see, the other goalkeeper coach absolutely does see.
Not just goalkeeper coaches, managers, everyone, fans, like everything. I always say every club I've been at, like some fans will absolutely love me and some will absolutely hate me. You could be the player of the year at this club, but you still have a minority of fans that don't rate you, and that's football, and that's opinions, and that's why we love football.
And we won't make this an homage to Neil Cutler. It is the Rich O'Donnell podcast, yeah. But just a word on him and his coaching techniques. He's now out of the game in a full-time capacity, obviously left Aston Villa this season, still involved in the game in some respects, but your take on him as a goalkeeper coach?
Being honest, he's probably still to this day the only, not just goalkeeper coach, but person in football that I 100% trust. And I've had that relationship with where I know whatever he's doing or was doing for my career was for the benefit of my career and for me. Yeah, he's, like I say, his attention to detail and his actual coaching is phenomenal. And like I say, just changing little bits in the way I trained and certain actions, just tweaking like a little hand position. It's so minimal things to a lot of people, but it made such a big difference in my career and where I could sort of wasn't quite getting to this save, I would end up making these saves in this time. And moving out of that 2 years, I felt like that sort of set me up for the rest of my career. And I was lucky enough last summer to go and work with him again when he was at Aston Villa. I went and had a week with him, being involved in his session there, exactly the same as he would be with me at Walsall at 25 years old. He would speak to me the exact way as he would speak to Emi Martinez. And that's the sort of respect that he sort of, not demands, but he just gives off that sort of energy where you can't not listen to Kutz. And like, whichever way he spoke, like I said, speaking to Emi and speaking to the 19-year-old goalkeeper at Villa would be exactly the same. But Emi knows that he's doing it for the right reasons, and Emi knows that he's that good at what he does that it's going to get him to that next level. And it has, it's shown. So, yeah, just in a nutshell, just one of the, well, I think he's the best coach I've worked with, but not only as a coach, as a person, as a man, he's top notch.
There's some great videos. I remember in those early days, he was quite proactive in posting on YouTube. So some really good videos.
There's a good story behind that, actually.
Oh, go on.
So these videos, it was posting on for the Walsall channel. He created this channel himself because at the time he wanted to buy equipment for the goalkeeper group. So like bloat mannequins and stuff. So all the ads and stuff that would earn the money from the YouTube thing, he wanted it to use for the goalkeeping channel and use towards the goalkeeping equipment. So as time's gone on, he's posted more videos, he's getting more and more views and stuff like that. And then he sees that he's earned X amount from thing. All of a sudden, the club get like ear of it and they were like, no, you can't use it for your own stuff. So then we sort of stopped doing it because we never ended up buying anything from it. And yeah, it sort of got kiboshed a little bit because the club got like note of it that he was going to use it for other stuff to help the club, to get equipment for us. And it sort of just, I don't know what happened exactly. I don't know the conversations got had. But all of a sudden, after they sort of found out, the videos sort of stopped and they were less frequent. But yeah, we never got any bloke mannequins anyway.
That's such a shame because I remember watching those at the time and thinking, I mean, it was stuff that was happening, I imagine, in training grounds all over the country, but it was stuff that you hadn't seen that often, even to the point of having the poles to, you know, replicate a deflection. I'd not seen that on camera before.
I think he was just sort of ahead of the times a little bit. He was very forward thinking, always thinking about the next step, how we can make this session better, how we can make that better, how we can improve the goalkeepers in certain aspects. And every goalkeeper that he's worked with, I would say, has gone on and improved. And I don't think that's an exaggeration to say that. I mean, you look at, he had Neil Everidge after me, he's gone on and had a great career. And then obviously, like more recently, he's took Emi from Arsenal, probably played, I say around 100 games before he came to Cuts. He was probably a 23, 24 year old goalkeeper, but he was 30 in terms of his development and where, how many games he played and where he was at. And now he's officially the best in the world. He's won the World Cup. And Cuts, I'm not saying it's all down to Cuts, and Cuts would say that himself, but certainly the work that he's done with Emmy has sort of got him to that thing. And every, like I say, I can't think of anyone who's worked with that's not gone on. Liam Roberts, another example, now at Middlesbrough. Everyone seems to have progressed under him. And I don't think there's many goalie coaches that you could sort of say is that's happened to.
Here's Wilson. And Brewster. And Wilson, great touch. Oh, super stop by the goalkeeper. Really, really good reaction save by Richard O'Donnell.
So that was your time at Walsall. We won't go through it chronologically and say you were at this club, this club, this club, this club. But you then were offered a deal to stay at Walsall. Having waited so long to get your chance, really, in professional football, you got that chance. You were with Walsall for 2 years, two very successful years. You were then offered a deal, but you decided to turn that down and move on to Wigan, which then catalysed this series of moves, which we'll get onto shortly when I say it is quite a unique journey. But just talk us through the whole process of leaving Walsall, moving on to Wigan, and what came thereafter.
So I've gone through a period, like I say, 2 years, started over the 2 years, I've got to a point where I've got a lot of clubs like looking at me, thinking, yeah, we want to take him for next year. And no disrespect to Walsall, the bigger clubs who had, unless I'll say how it is, because I'll be honest about it, the contract that I was getting off at Walsall compared to a contract that I was getting offered at Wigan, for example, was four times as much. And that's the reality of it. And I can't thank Walsall enough for that 2 years. And I still love the club now. I've got so much time for everyone there. And when you get offered that opportunity as a parent, a husband, a homeowner, anyone else in that situation in a different job wouldn't think twice. And that was exactly where I was. I was driving an hour 50, hour 45, what it was, into training every day there and back. So it was like nearly 4 hours a day in a car. So I've got this opportunity to go and earn a lot better money. A big club just been relegated from the Championship in League One. There was a few other clubs, like moving on to like the one after, we will come back to it, but Bristol City, for example, wanted to take me as a two, offer me even better money to go there as a two. But at the time, I'm thinking, well, I've just played 2 years there. I've still only played probably 150, 200 games. I'm like, I want to go and carry on playing now. It's not the time to go and settle on the bench and settle for that. So I took the move to Wigan. And do you know what? I don't regret any decision I've made in my career. So it's not the right way. I don't regret going to Wigan at all. It was the right decision at that time in my career, based on what I knew and what was there. But it was just one of them moves that just didn't work out. Played the first 12 games or so, and truth be told, I was probably average playing-wise.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know. I really don't know what it was in that. It's really hard to put a finger on. Like I say, it was just one of them moves that you see often in football that, for whatever reason, just doesn't work out. And that was probably the only place I've been where I thought, this is just not working. And I don't know what it was about the club. I've got no bad things to say about the club. I just don't know what it was. Something just didn't click. But ask me if I regret going there. I don't. Because, like I say, I'm basing it off what I thought was best for me, my family, my career at the time. And if that happened now, and I was still in the city, and I was just leaving Walsall, and the exact thing happened now, I would do the same thing. So I don't regret it at all. But it just didn't work. And that's as simple as it. I can't tell you why it was. It just didn't work.
Is that something you felt from the moment you stepped into the training ground?
No, I don't think so. I think it was the manager at the time, Gary Caldwell, was very much a playing out from the back manager. And I was quite comfortable with that because we did that at Walsall quite well. We were very, like, the manager at Walsall gave me the freedom to play whatever I sort of wanted with no repercussions off the manager. If I got it wrong and they scored, he would hold his hands up and say, that's my fault, I've given the licence. So I was very comfortable with it. But it was, I found, to the ridiculous extreme of playing out. I would have to play it to a centre-half. Bearing in mind, at this point, defenders couldn't come inside the box, and it wasn't how it was now. So you're playing to a defender who's on the edge of the box who could have a striker really close to him. And I just felt like I'm passing it to the centre-half who's getting stitched, and I had to pass that ball. like whatever happened. I remember playing pre-season game in Scotland, I think it was against Dundee, and before the game he said to me, you cannot kick it anywhere near the halfway line, you have to play out every time. I was like, right, okay. And I'm trying to play out, and it was just, it was near on impossible because I had like a full press on, and I'm thinking, what do I do with the ball here? Like, it's impossible. And from that moment, I'm thinking, like, he's not giving me any freedom to sort of go and do what I think's right. Because I'm thinking, like, if there's a full press on there, the best ball, we had like Craig Davies up front, like the big striker. I'm thinking the best ball is to try and drop it into him and play from there. And he was adamant he wanted to play out. And I'm not saying that was wrong. He obviously went and got promoted that season with Wigan, so it obviously worked. But for me, it did something, just, I don't know what it was in general. But I remember thinking at that game, thinking this is like to the extreme where it's sort of uncomfortable for everyone trying to play. And I don't know whether that was a sort of turning point for me, like psychologically or what, but.
It's so difficult, that, isn't it? Because, again, this is something we always discuss with punditry when they say, why hasn't he just launched it into Rose Ed there? And often, like you've just articulated there, you really want to launch it into Rose Ed, but you are under strict instruction from your manager to not do that. And if you do that, it's possible you might be out of the side the next game. So how difficult is it for you to not go in the changing room and have that discussion? And were you, who was your goalkeeper coach at the time?
Mike Pollitt.
So were you having that discussion with him?
And he would sort of just say, well, this is what the manager wants, and this is how. To be fair, I think the longer the season went on, I think he sort of realised at my age that it's not always the right decision. I think he eventually came round to, right, sometimes it's better to go in long. But at first, like I say, I remember pre-season, just like, you have to play. And it was like, wow. But just another example of that, and how fans can perceive what they don't, obviously, fans don't always understand and realise what's going on in the dressing room. So another example of that is at Bradford, which I'm sure we'll come on to, but we had, David Hopkin was our manager, and his instructions to me was kick it as far and as long and as high as you possibly can every time you get the ball. So I'm talking like, you get the ball in your hands, you don't want a side volley, he wants it up in the air with snow on it every time. Right, okay, that's what the manager wants, fine. Bearing in mind we had Owen Doyle up front and no height around him. So I'm kicking, I'm playing at Valley Parade with 16, 17, 18,000 people. Screaming at me, saying, why are you kicking it to Owen Doyle all the time? And the amount of times on like social media or even just the fans at the stadium want to say, well, this is what I have to do. How do you not, like, you've got to see this. Like, I wouldn't do it if that's the thing. But that is the manager's instructions. So that's just another example of, you play to how the manager wants you to play. All right, at times you might, if he wants to kick it long and there's a chance to play out, you might play out. But generally, the manager wants you to play out, you play out. If he wants to kick it long, you kick it long. If you don't, if you're not doing what you say, you might not be in the team, as you just said before. So, yeah, I think like from the fans' point of view, they don't always see that. And it like from a goalkeeper's point of view, when you're doing, like Bradford was the biggest example I can think of where I'm kicking it and I'm kicking it. And even me kicking it, I'm thinking, this is not right. Kicking it to Doyle, who's not going to win it in the air because it's just not his game. He's a great footballer, but he's not great in the air. But that's what we've been told to do. And that's what you have to do if you want to stay in the team.
On one side of that, it's almost like you can thank him in a way because it's just getting the ball away from you. It's like, there we go, I don't need to deal with this now. But then that's not you taking responsibility either. You kind of want to be part of the game, don't you? So what do you prefer? Actually, do you prefer playing out? Do you prefer going long? Do you prefer a mixture of the two?
So I just prefer a mixture and playing what... like. So at the minute at Rochdale, for example, we try and play a bit more than we sort of did beginning of sort of middle part of the season under Jim Bentley, and we're trying to play a bit more. But the onus is very much on me in terms of, if I think it's right to play and I can see a way that we get out, there has to be a way that we get out. We have a structure that the gaffer works to, where if I play to centre-half, this should be on. But if I don't see that, if I'm playing centre-half and I don't see that he's got that next option on, I've got full licence to then go and play player I want. And I think that's sort of the right thing to do. You have to trust the goalkeeper to make the right decisions on the pitch, because at the end of the day, you're putting the ball down for a goal kick, for example. You can see everything sort of there, and it's so different from the sidelines. I've been there myself and watched it, and I'm thinking, like, to the goalkeeper who's playing for my team, like, oh, that looks tight, that, he shouldn't play that. And then he plays it, and they're out. Because you can't see everything from there, but when you're the goal, you can see everything that... you should be able to see all the options that are on, so you should trust the goalkeeper. Like I said, what Dean Smith was the best for me at doing that at Walsall. He sort of just said, you play what you see. If you want to zing a side volley into the winger, to his feet or his chest, and you see that's on, you're going to do it. If you get it wrong, I'll take responsibility for that. So it sort of just gives you that little confidence boost. Say, well, I can't really do much wrong here, because if I do it, I look really good. And if I don't, and they go and score, which is probably unlikely, I would say. But if they did go and score, you knew that you still had the manager's backing. Not that you'd sort of want him to go out and say, yeah, that's my fault. But you knew that deep down, away from the press and that, he'd be saying, don't you worry, that's on me. That's what I've told you to play, what you see. So Dean was the best at that for me, at giving you that sort of responsibility and that ownership to take control of the situation.
I was quite surprised by his comments the other day. Did you see those on Dan Iverson?
I'm not surprised by that.
Really? No. So that's the way that he was?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. I remember playing there again under Dean and did quite well for Dean and made a lot of good saves at the time. And he'd get asked about it afterwards in the press or whatever. And he'd be like, well, yeah, that's sort of Rich's job at the end of the day. And yeah, he's made a good save there. But so it doesn't surprise me at all. That's exactly how Dean is. But yeah, he was a great man manager, Dean, to be fair. So away from that, like, sort of you'd walk in the training ground on a Monday morning and he sort of walked past and he's like, different class of the day, by the way. And he'd give you that little nudge, but to the outside, that's sort of how he is. And he'd say, yeah, well, that's his job. But he was really good at just giving you a little, really good the other day, by the way.
I bet he had the same haircut that he did at Walsall than he does now.
He did exactly. Looks exactly the same, to be fair.
It looks like he gets out of bed and it's exactly the same. He goes to the hairdressers and just, I don't know, they don't even know what to do with him.
That's exactly, he's exactly the same. He's not changed in however many years it is.
You mentioned fans there as well. Just to quickly touch on this, how difficult is it for you to, or are you tempted to bat back sometimes when you see them spouting that stuff and you just want to say, no, this is the way that it actually is?
It's very tempting, yeah. You can't lie. If you said it wasn't, I think social media is brilliant and it's there for, if you use it properly, it's there and it can be brilliant. With that, you've got to take the good and the bad. So you have to accept that at times you're going to get a bit of stick on it and that is what it is. But yeah, like going back to the Bradford one where we're kicking it long and kicking long, like I say, the amount of times I wanted to just turn around, like I kick it to the point where you probably get boos at time, like for kicking it. And the amount of times I want to turn around and say, what do you want me to do? This is what he told me to do. But you just can't, and that's how it is. So you've got to be strong enough to sort of block that out, carry on doing what the manager wants you to do. And then at the end of the day, if as a team we're doing what he wants us to do and that's not working, that's going to fall on the manager eventually. So in my mind, there's been times throughout my career where I've really had to bite my tongue, and I have, because you have to for the sake of a lot of aggro and a lot of, you just open yourself up to even more criticism, I think, a lot of time. But certainly there's been times where I've wanted to tell the truth of what's really going on in certain situations, but you just can't.
So let's talk movements and contracts post Walsall and Wigan. So correct me if I've got any of this wrong, but we've touched on the fact that you were at Wigan. So you signed a 3-year deal there, right? You see Jeskalainen came in, got the nod. Yeah. So halfway through that first season, so the first year of that 3-year deal, you moved on to Bristol City initially as a loan, but then were immediately signed by Lee Johnson. That was on a 2.5-year deal. Less than a year later into that 2.5-year deal, you signed the same length contract at Rotherham. Yeah. A year later into that 2.5-year deal, you signed the same length contract again, this time at Northampton, but you had a relegation clause in that contract which allowed you to leave at the end of the season, at which point you moved to Bradford, which is where you stayed for 4 years.
Yeah. That's
I mean, that's bonkers.
It is, right? So I'll talk you through it. One thing I've sort of failed to mention in all of this is since I was at Walsall, I was playing week in, week out, and I got to that point where I was playing, I always found it really difficult when I wasn't playing for whatever reason in the team, whether that's I'd been dropped, not because I didn't agree with it as such or anything like that, I just found it difficult, like psychologically not playing and having that buzz on a Saturday or a Tuesday. So I think building on from Walsall, that next sort of 3 or 4 year period, I found it really difficult when I wasn't in a place where I was playing. So Rotherham, I played the rest of that season in the Championship, started the season, and then we signed Marek Rodak on loan. I think Price got injured maybe, so there was just me and Marek. And it was a funny story behind this one, actually. So me and Marek I still played at the beginning when Marek came in, then he took over, and we changed a few times, and it got to the point where we were sort of changing, because it like literally made like 2 games in, and then he'd play 2 games, and I would play 2 games. And I'm sort of like thinking, this is not doing anyone really any good. I'm thinking, do I take ownership of this and try and have a little conversation with the manager and see where he's... So anyway, I decided, maybe rightly or wrongly, but again, I wouldn't change it. I've gone to the manager and I said, listen, like, Warney, me and Marek are playing two games here, two games there. We're swapping. I said, I don't think it's any good for anyone, really. Like, for us, for the defence, for the whole team, it's a little bit unsettling. And I said, I think, whether it be me or Marek, I think you're better off going for 10 games even and just give them a 10-game block. And if you're not happy, then change it. I was half thinking, like, he's going to put me in for the next 10 games. I didn't play again. So that was sort of that. So then,
do you think that's him saying, you don't come in here and tell me what to do?
No, because I don't think Warnie was that type. Because genuinely, I was going in there with the best of intentions for the team and everything. I was, because it was difficult. Because we're, like I said, changing the keeper every two or three games, it was tough on everyone. And I'm thinking, this ain't right for everyone. So I was genuinely doing it for the purpose and for the benefit of everyone. It wasn't like a selfish thing I was doing. Yeah, like I'm talking about it now and all them sort of things. Mm-hmm. Like, I still come to the same conclusion that I don't regret any of it, because...
You can't, right? You can't regret it. What's pointless.
No, but I always base everything off, like I say, at the time, you've got to make a decision. And football's a horrible industry like that, because you have to make a decision in a split... Could be an hour. You could have an hour to make a decision on your whole career sometimes. You could have a few weeks, but you could have an hour. So when I'm making the decisions to leave your Bristol Cities, I did it because I wanted to... It was an opportunity for us to come back home. When I left Rotherham, again, wasn't particularly looking to leave, so I felt like I could get back in, but I did miss playing football at that time, and there was a guaranteed spot to go and play. Don't regret that. I don't regret leaving Northampton to go to Bradford. I ended up having four great years at Bradford, and obviously left there in the summer, and I don't regret, even like this year we've been relegated, but I don't regret it. I've gone on and like played another 40-odd games in the season. Again, might sound stupid, some people I've enjoyed that, because when at the end of Bradford, which I'm sure we'll come on to, I got to the point where I was just knew I needed to get out of there, and I wasn't enjoying day-to-day football at all anymore. So the main thing I wanted from this summer was to get back just enjoying my football again, and I've had that this year. Although we've been relegated, I've enjoyed that day-to-day sort of feel, how things have been playing week in, week out. I don't regret that either.
So this season, just a couple more questions. So this season, you hit the 450 career game mark. Yeah. Since then, you made six more. So you're at 456 games in total throughout your career. And this, again, is where your career is so different to so many other goalkeepers we've spoken to, in that I would say only in five of those campaigns that you've racked up that number of games were you a regular starter for one club. But that's not to say you weren't playing, and this is what's so interesting. You were playing the games, you were hopping about, you were playing all the time, just not at one particular club for a lengthy period of time, but you were still totting up those appearances, like we say, in those short spells for Rotherham, for Northampton.
Yeah, exactly that. And like I say, if I hadn't have made that decision, as we spoke at right at the beginning, going on loan and playing for Grimsby for however many games, for Macclesfield for however many games, for Oldham for them four games, I wouldn't have got to the point where I am now and I've played 450 odd games. And when I look at it now as well, I look at my kids, and Archie in particular, who's 9 year old, and he's obsessed with football, like obsessed. And although the season's not been fantastic, because in terms of the end result and we've been relegated, the sort of pride that I have of Archie coming to watch me play football beats anything. So Archie was obviously born when I was at Walsall, and the fact that he's sort of come and watched me, whichever club I've been, if I wasn't playing at these clubs, and this is where I go back to not regretting any decisions, I always look at my career, and I've always thought, probably more so since I've had kids, and probably in particular Archie, because he's a boy and he loves football, so Fear's not that interested in it. I want to look back on my career, and I've played these games, and Archie's come and watched me play these games. Archie's been to Wembley to watch me play, although he's young. Archie's been to here, there, and everywhere to watch me play, and he's making memories, and we're making memories together, my wife's making memories, and that can't be replaced by anything. For me, like I say, I'm very family orientated, and the pride I have and seeing Archie's face, me walking out onto a football pitch, even more reaffirms to me that I don't regret hopping from there to there because I wasn't playing at that time, and then going there to there because Archie, my wife and Sophia have been there every step of the way, and we've done it all together. And that's what, when I finish playing, that's what will fill me with the most pride, having them three, along with mum and dad, who have travelled the length of the country for 20 years. I can't forget to tell mum and dad. But having that sort of, the memories, and Archie being able to tell his kids that, you know, your granddad played football professionally for Sheffield Wednesday, all the, and these clubs, and went to watch you. And having that, just being able to pass all my old shirts, my medals and stuff to Archie, just and Sophia, just doesn't, it can't be topped.
Preston looked dangerous early on. Jermaine Beckford bringing the best out of Richard O'Donnell.
Okay, before we get to Richard Lee's final question that he always delivers to every goalkeeper, I've just got a couple of names I'd like to throw at you, players that you've played with over the years, just your opinion, whether there's any story behind those players. So, Ben Wilson.
Oh,
I mean, what a story this is. So he was your number two at Bradford, right?
Incredible. So me and Jake Eastwood were speaking about him the other day, in fact. And so Ben was like, he's a really, really top guy. Like, Ben would have time in the world for anybody who walked past him. And he'd gone through his sort of career, because Ben was another one who actually, when I was at Chesterfield and Tommy Lee got injured and I was playing, Ben came and sat on the bench there as well. So he came to Chesterfield before that. So we've crossed paths twice as well. He sort of had this, even when he went to Coventry originally, I think he obviously didn't play for a long time, and he sort of got this feeling that, not that he was happy to sort of not play, but he was sort of like in that mould of a two. And then he's got his chance, and he's just gone from strength to strength to strength to strength. And I'll be honest, even when he was at Bradford, he's had all the ability in the world. He kicks the ball extremely well. He's quick, athletic, agile, brave. So it doesn't surprise me that he's gone and done that. The only thing I would have questioned with Ben, and I think he'd say it himself, is mentally, was he sort of ready to go and play week in, week out? But obviously now he's gone on and done that, and he's not looked back, and I'm actually buzzing for him because he deserves it.
Yeah, he's someone that I desperately want to have on the podcast, because that story is just, yeah, incredible. Remarkable. And lastly, we've had this gent on the podcast, and everyone who's played with him, we've always made sure they have a story to tell. Mr. Stephen Bywater.
I'm not sure I can tell you the story.
That's what everyone says as well, yeah.
Honestly. Do you know what? Stevie Bywater, what a guy. He's just the most unique man you will ever meet in your life. You'll never meet another Stephen Bywater. I mean, everyone's fully aware of like the stories in the papers with the caravan that he got in his back garden with the things piled up for his neighbour to annoy him and stuff like that. So Steve, we've gone in training one day. There was me, Steve, and I think Aaron Jameson. We've gone out to training one day and it was freezing, like proper freezing. We had a little goalie area at Sheffield Wednesday where we were waiting for Andy Rose, the goalie coach, to come out, and he was taking a bit longer than usual, so we stood there. And like I say, it was middle of winter, we were all proper freezing. So Steve's going, oh God, proper cold. Like, and I was like, yeah. So he wrapped up in everything, like proper. Next minute, like walks to the side off the little goalie area, like to a bit of the longer grass. And he's just stood there, like staring up at the sky. Really doing anything, just like staring. And I looked down and he just pissed himself, weed himself everywhere. Like, and I was like, Steve, what are you doing? It's like, yeah, well, I'm freezing. This will warm me up, won't it? And this was before training started, and he just trained like that the whole session.
No.
And we were all like, what's going on here? I've never seen anything like it.
He's diving, you're diving in it because he's diving in it.
Well, no, because he went to the side, but yeah, I mean, he's diving in the area when he's wet. But yeah, I'm thinking, what is going on here? And then there was other, it's just, I remember him one day, like, walking out to the car park after training, he pops his boot open and puts stuff in, and there's so much stuff in his boot, like, I was like, Steve, what's all that in your boot, like? And I'm going, like, he had bags of, like, grit and sand, you know, like, and he was like, what have you got all that for? He's like, well, my car's rear-wheel drive, so, and bearing in mind, this was, like, March time, I think. He's like, well, if it snows or anything, like, my car's rear-wheel drive, so I've got all these bags in the boot to, like, weigh my back wheels down and that, so it might help. I think, Steve, it's not going to snow for a start. And then I was like, what else you got in there? He's got, like, a full-on survival kit in his boot and that in case, like, he ever gets stranded anyway. I'm talking, like, food, clothes, probably even a flare or something like that to put up in it. And it was just, but, like, everyone will tell you stories about Steve, but one thing about him, he was the nicest guy, like a really, really top guy. And he's one of them that would literally do anything for you if you needed him to. But you definitely wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of him.
Yeah, absolutely. What a character. We've done one pod. I feel like we need to do Another one. So, Rich, it's been great having you on. Thanks so much for sharing your story. To finish the podcast, we always end with one final question from Mr. Richard Lee.
Thank you, Matthew. It is my time to shine. The most important moment of the show, the most important question for all that have been asked up to this point. Rich O'Donnell, what has goalkeeping given you?
Goalkeeping's given me, I think the biggest thing for me is like when like I said to you just previously then, when I finish playing football, it's given me so many memories that not only for me, but for everyone in my family. My side of family, for example, are all massive Wednesday fans. I sort of lived their dream a little bit, and I played for Sheffield Wednesday. So early on in my career, at the 22s, 23s, when I was playing, they've got that sort of side of it. And now, like, moving out towards the back end of my career, where obviously I've got two kids, the biggest thing, like, is making memories with them. And like I said to you before, that means more to me than anything else. So the fact that my kids and my wife and my family have all got to come and see me play, they've been to Wembley to watch me play football, that's a biggest and the best thing I could wish for in my career.
Rich O'Donnell, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, thank you.